Blog Talk Radio.
Another Down South and Dirty episode of Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith and Stacey Hopkins in the house.
Yeah, how you doing, boo? I'm kind of hyped this week because, you know, we get to talk to part of the bench that's growing out there. So we're going to have Jesse Smith, who's running from the 3rd Congressional District in Alabama, on the air, and you know, things have been popping all over as usual, so I'm kind of hyped up. How about you?
Well, I am too. So far, 2016 is looking like it's going to be an interesting year. So let's go ahead and just jump into some of this interesting stuff that's taking place. Well, for all of us here in Georgia, we know that our General Assembly goes into session on Monday. So this year being that is a presidential election year, you can be sure that a lot of stuff that goes through our General Assembly is going to be pure political ass kissery and straight up fuckery. Because the Republicans will be doing everything that they can do to try to make a platform to be anti-democratic, anti-progressive, anti-left, just so that they can put themselves on the national scene so that they can raise money. And then we will see our side, the left, led by the wonderful Democratic Party of Georgia, attempting to counter all of these different things, which in that in itself will be interesting to see what will they be countering with this year. Some of the major stuff we're going to see, we know we're going to see some type of reiteration of RFRA. Whether it might be under a different name, but we will probably see that again this year. I know that there's a fight brewing about medical marijuana and cannabis oil. And we know, as always, we're going to have a fight about education and the budget because, you know, under Georgia law, that's going to be the first thing that the governor has to put through is they got to talk about the budget first. So
right, that's what they're supposed to do. Period.
Yeah,
I mean,
we have to set a budget first in Georgia before we can talk about anything else. So that's going to be so we see that coming down the pipeline. And so this is, like I said, being a presidential year, we're going to see a lot of craziness. And it's interesting, Goldman, you know, talking to when you talk about the medical marijuana issue, because you see a lot of conservatives up in arms more than you would normally see progressives. Now, this is an issue that we can see some bipartisan push on here in Georgia, just getting past this first threshold. But you're not seeing a whole bunch of effort going in from, you know, to form these alliances to get this done, because neither side is getting exactly what they want. You know, the Republicans are looking at it from a standpoint of who's going to grow it, when's going to grow it, who's going to grow it, how they're going to grow it, and where they're going to grow it. And on our side, we got a lot of people who are just pushing them straight up, let's legalize. This is Georgia. We're not particularly there yet. So we got to pass this first hurdle, and a lot of the folks, particularly the Liberty faction of the Republican Party, who normally progressives don't get along with, but this is an issue that we can work with. And I really need the legislators of the Georgia General Assembly to start acting like statesmen instead of elected officials, because we have to pick and choose our battles and fight and work together when we can, because that's what the people of Georgia are waiting to see. instead of a lot of partisan bickering. When we do work together in Georgia, we usually find some pretty decent solutions.
Right.
But we got working together, and a lot of times we have become so polarized that we're not necessarily working together to make these things happen. So I'm looking forward to the session tonight. Since it is pre-session tonight, it's the Wild Hog Dinner. For y'all who are not in Georgia, y'all don't probably understand it, but there's a dinner that takes place in the, just before the session called the Wild Hog. We Southerners, we like our pig. And
well, they got chicken, so too, and it's the Georgia Food
chicken.
Bank that does this every year.
But yeah, so everybody's going to know that, you know, people are going to be down there, you know, getting, you know, they're FaceTiming, getting reacclimated because some of them may have not seen each other since the session ended. And it's kind of the reception of the legislators returning back to Atlanta. Because, unlike, you know, in the state of Georgia, we're only in session for 40 days. Our legislature is not like some other states where they're constantly sitting. Our legislature is part-time. So, well, officially it's part-time, but our legislatures do work throughout the rest of the year, going to conferences, and some of them are holding town halls during the outside season of the session. But that's being tonight. And also, so this can get out of there, if anybody who has a candidate or a legislator that they are supportive of, you need, if you feel like your person, whoever you're supporting, needs your dollars, you need to get them in before midnight, because once in the state of Georgia, during the session, the legislators are not allowed to raise money during the session. If you are running or you're planning on running for the legislature, this is the perfect time for you to raise some money, because they can't raise it either. So those of you who are looking to primary people, it's time to go get your money. And that means some of y'all out there, you who are legislators, who need to be primary, be prepared. It may be coming this year. There's a lot of smoke in the woods. So where there's smoke, sometimes there's a fire. So if you
sit down, make your donor list, look at your network, and get your coalition together and raise that money. It can be done. I think Bernie Sanders is showing the template on how to do it, though, whether it's big dollars or little ones. Those little ones add up. So you're absolutely right.
Speaking of little dollars, and this is not necessarily a political situation, but me and my mother were having a conversation this morning. We were talking about the lottery. And we were talking about...
Oh, yeah. I woke up real mad this morning because I just knew the Come Up Express had come my way.
But, you know, we're closing in on $1 billion. Now...
Yeah. It's over $1 billion. It's $1.3 billion.
But this is the thing, and this is the conversation me and my mother were having. It is amazing that if you look at the people who buy lottery tickets, a lot of the people who buy lottery tickets are people who are not members of the 1%. Okay? They are the same people our progressive policy is being made to try to protect. And this is not a bad thing or a good thing, but it shows the power of the small dollar, because the lottery winning is a jackpot. That means that every time you done paid to play this lottery game, you done put into that jackpot. So the last Powerball was when? What, 2-3 months ago?
The last big one, yeah. It's been rolling over for a little bit. I don't really...
The thing is that this jackpot is $1.3 million, majority off of $1 and $2 hits by regular, everyday Americans. What could we do? And I know I got a friend in Philadelphia who is now saying, you finally got the power of the dollar in your head. Where's my dollar? But the power of the dollar, if we as regular everyday American citizens can take a dollar over maybe a 6-month period and contributing these dollars like we contribute to the lottery, what could we do?
We could do a lot, and we talked about that. I mean, we talked about that a couple of times.
You know,
that is the key.
You know, people don't like paying taxes.
Don't see it.
I think American Americans over a 6 month period, we can raise $1.3 billion over a 6 month period, even less of a period. If Americans was to give a dollar, we had an ability to do that. You know, that kind of changes the whole scheme of how we could fund certain situations without, you know, I could say, do a GoFundMe, something, you know.
Here's the kick in the head, though. If you or I would have asked for that, right, to put that proposal out there, folks would want to know. I mean, look at the big brouhaha that blew up between Sean King and, you know, DeRay and that little organization they had. Them people want to know what you do with that dollar. How'd you spend that 15 cents? People put money into the lottery, and they don't ask where they're going. And in Georgia, we have some issues with the lottery.
That's why I said Uncle Sam, state of Georgia, if we wanted something bad enough, you set this up under your auspices so we can get some type of oversight, this, that, and the other. But, again, it all comes out, and this is what conversation me and my mother were having, is that we could do a lot of great things if it wasn't for great greed.
Mm.
Because the thing is that majority of the people that you will find arguing and asking the question, where is the money going? And I know this, and I know this from being a person who has run a county party and different organizations. The main people that will first bring up the argument of where the money is going will be the first ones, if you gave them the access to the money, will be the first ones to take it.
Okay, well, tell it. And we know
okay.
It's true. This doesn't apply to everybody, but you know who you are that's out there. You know who you are.
The ones who are very loud and vocal about it. The first ones to ask and the first ones, they will do it. They will do it. And the ones who can't explain. Now, I've always been able to explain, well, did we spend some money here, this, that, and then people go, well, why did we spend it that way? You being transparent with them, but they still fighting with you about it, that makes people not want to do it. And that's because those folks are trying to make a good solution not happen. Because then they can get the money because that bad solution they're going to put forth, which looks a little bit better because they know how to put the shade on it. It's a great good is not being done because we have so much great greed. And I'm going to give that one to Sister Taylor, my mama. She brought that great good is not being done because there's great greed. Y'all,
good, Sister Taylor.
Y'all put y'all quotations on that one, and y'all better not take my mama's thing and claim it for y'all own.
It's going to be a hashtag, man.
It's going to be a hashtag. Great greed.
It's
going to
be a
hashtag. It's right. But the thing is,
and, you know, there's some issues with the lottery about how they changed the rules, and, you know, people are not talking about that. They have changed the odds. And that was done recently.
The winning that people don't necessarily understand that cost you more money to play that, but folks increase your odds of winning, and people don't understand how to play these games. They just throw money at it. So, and there has not been a great ability, there has not been a great effort to explain the way the games are being played now. Only people that know is these pro lottery players. Those who play every day, all day, now they done sat down and did their research, but the casual player has no understanding whatsoever. None.
I just can't. I don't even need the whole jackpot. Can I get some of it? But I tell you what, if I'm not on next week, you'll know what happened. You will
but
know
I'm
what saying, happened because y'all going to
have
to put me on a milk carton to find me.
I ain't afraid to say it. If I win the lottery, I'm finna become the next George Soros. I mean, the joke. We finna get some jokers elected. You understand me? We're gonna get some jokers
we
elected.
We finna put on.
And I'm going to throw it.
It will definitely be the put on express.
I'm gonna take advantage of the fact. We're gonna take advantage of the situation. We're going to get some progressives in the office, and we're going to make it happen. And I promise you, if I win, you come asking me, oh, do you think some of these questionnaires that y'all get from these endorsing bodies Hell now. Oh, you gonna have to prove it. You might have to do. We might have to have a whole TV show, a reality TV show, for you to get this money, because I'm gonna need you to prove it. Because it ain't gonna
right.
be no, it ain't gonna be no fake progressives getting no change from him. But
I can see the little notes. The little notes coming in on Facebook and said, "Can you please help me? You know, I always love what you did. You know they're coming.
Yeah,
you know they're coming.
You've been hating on me. Yeah,
but,
you've been hating on me all this time. But all of a sudden, you would be my friend. You would be my friend. All kinds of committees. All kinds of committees. But, you know, we're going to leave that alone. We're going to leave that alone.
Yeah, we're going to leave that one alone.
We're going to leave that one alone.
But,
what we got going on in Bernie world?
Let's see, in Bernie world, it's been interesting. Did you catch the story about the bullet holes at Bernie's campaign office in Nevada?
No, I actually taken a week off from watching actual news and trying to see the difference of how the difference of gleaning information from social media is versus getting it from the mainstream media. So I've been doing that experiment, so I hadn't seen that.
I've done that for 2 weeks, and let me tell you, it's enlightening. It really is. But apparently Bernie was in Nevada, and they discovered a bullet hole in the campaign office. Folks are passionate. Folks are pissed off, but come on now. Shooting up campaign offices, they're investigating it. There's really not much being said. But that's kind of disturbing news to hear. You know, we kind of expected this. I remember when President Obama got elected, and I was like, they need to get him, you know, the fruit of Islam is security. But, you know, it's just part of the madness that's going around, and, you know, it's like we're the new Wild Wild West. Everybody's, you know, all Johnny or Belinda blazed up and ready to shoot up the place. Let's see, we had Bernie on the nightly show with Larry Wilmore. Good interview, good to see Bernie smile. It was kind of a bit of lightness and kind of, you know, Larry's been pushing Bernie to come out and say who he's thinking about as his cabinet is running mate. There's a lot of people who are saying he endorsed Elizabeth Warren. I don't take it the same way. He hasn't come out and said that, but you know, there's definitely a lot of love going between, you know, Warren and Bernie. So, no, he did not officially endorse or say that Elizabeth Warren is his running mate, but you know, if you haven't checked it out, go to Comedy Central and check out that interview. Then our man, okay, one of the South, Killer Mike, a.k.a. Michael Render, was on the I keep calling it the Colbert Report, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and he dropped some knowledge to white folks who seem to be just becoming aware that there's a problem in the black community with institutionalized and systemic racism, and pretty much broke that down. Pretty good interview. Killer Mike is turning out to be one of the strongest advocates, along with State Senator Nina Turner, for being, you know, a surrogate for Senator Sanders and an envoy to the black community. There has been, you know, a lot going on. It looks like Bernie is cracked the polls in Nevada and also in New Hampshire. And, South Carolina, he's working on it. But what's really interesting to hear, and he's running the same trajectory as President Obama did in 2008. You know, I really get sick of hearing about how he has a problem with the black community. The problem is perpetuated by the media, because if you watch, you know, if you watch regular news, you know, not cable news, which barely mentions Bernie, and when they do, it's usually in the context of a Hillary Clinton story. you won't know about Bernie, but what's been amazing, particularly for me to see in Atlanta, I'm going to talk about Metro Atlanta because that's where I live, that's where I know. I'm hearing more and more people who are like, hell yeah, Bernie, you know, I like what he's saying. You know, I like the way the man does business. If you listen, one of the best ways to gauge the pulse of the black community, listen to black talk radio. You will hear a switch. You know, black people aren't having it. We're not, you know, we're not being told, we're not taking that, you know, you need to vote for this person and, you know, the establishment, the black establishment, which is a very, it's not as big as a coalition as people want you to think. That is saying, you know, we have to vote for Hillary. And when you ask them why, they can't really articulate why. And then people are coming back and asking questions about the policies that the Clintons, and I say that with an S, helped actively promote that we're fighting against right now. It is stunning to see people, once they know, they pretty much are like, it's, they take the Pepsi challenge and they're all for it. So, you know, just this past weekend, I was out on Campbellton Road, happened to step into a barbershop, which is a tour that is also being announced by Bernie Sanders. Are going to be hitting HBCUs and barbershops. Scout, you and I have said for years, that's where anybody needs to be. Forget about church. The barbershop, nail salon, hair salon.
What people fail to realize is a lot, like a lot of our legacy organizations and groups inside the African American community, and I use the word legacy, is that they have become somewhat dictatorial in how ideas are spread. There's very little freedom of thought or speech inside of the African American church and a lot of the other organizations that have led us to the point where we are today. Okay? Mm. Not saying to do their job. But where we are today, they've gotten it, you know, and you see it even inside of our politics. People want to homogenize everything we do, like there cannot be any break in thought pattern with the African-American community. But if you go to the barbershop, if you go to the hair salon, or you go to any other place outside of church where African-Americans congregate, you will find there are a multitude of different opinions about a whole matter of subjects. I mean, we're talking about from immigration, the reproductive rights. We're talking economics, education, foreign policy. Yes, black folks talk about foreign policy because guess what? Our sons and our daughters are the corporals, the privates, the corporals, and the sergeants or who are on the front line. Okay?
Absolutely.
We talk about it, okay? So, and whether you believe it or not, black folks travel overseas. We travel. Right now, it's a hot spot to be found to be in Dubai. African Americans are traveling to Dubai, making their money in high-tech jobs and teaching all over. We're traveling. We're very interested in sub-Saharan African relations. We're interested in Europe because, hell, guess what? We like going to Paris, too. Shit.
We're not a monolithic community. We have varied interests, and you know, one of the things, you know, what was really great, if anybody had missed yesterday's forum in Iowa, which was really great, that was probably, I was telling Scout before we went up on the air, that was what take all three of the debates that were done by the DNC, throw them out. Watch this debate because you had people asking questions. And one thing to notice, nobody once said anything about ISIS or terrorism, but it was real. These were real people asking real questions about the issues that impact their day-to-day lives. And not to say that foreign policy isn't a problem, but, you know, one of the big things that was noticed and was even called out during that forum, this was the Putting Families First forum by the Center for Community Change, Hillary Clinton wasn't there.
We were talking about her strong point. She knew that this was not being a foreign policy discussion. And, you know, speaking of foreign policy, if you go to the Down South and Dirty Facebook page, there was a post up, and we had a person that commented that her thing with Bernie, she would vote for Bernie if he's the nominee, but he's not strong on foreign policy. And I might need to do a whole other show on this, and I smell it coming. But why are we as Americans so preoccupied with our position as a world power when we are having problems at home? And not
Scout. That's part of the myth that we were all led to believe. You know, I talked about how we are, you know, when you say Republicans, oh, they're strong on, you know, financial issues, you know, economics, and they're strong on foreign policy. They're not. But when you ask, I mean, even Hillary Clinton, her own supporters, and there's a video up on YouTube asking, what were her accomplishments as Secretary of State? No one can articulate that. I think the only person who could roll out some accomplishments of hers was Susan Rice. No one else could come up with anything. So we say a candidate, you know, she can say she's strong on foreign policy, but where? You know, and it's a bit of sleight of hand.
So we're going to go ahead and end this conversation where we are right now because we look like we got Jesse on the line. Let's go ahead and kick over.
Yay!
Well, hello. Welcome to Down South and Dirty.
Down South and Dirty. I am glad to be here. Jesse Smith calling from Alabama.
Well, good to hear from you, sir. I mean, we were very excited that you agreed to come on because we just love seeing all of these Sanders Democrats who are popping up all over. It makes my heart sing, that's for sure. And I'm just so thankful. You know, Alabama, we're a lot alike, Alabama and Georgia in terms of politics. So it was like, we've got a Democrat running for Congress in Alabama. We got to talk to this guy. So first, I want to thank you for being on the show, and then I want to thank you for stepping up to run because that's a lot. So, but welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm definitely glad to be here, and you're right. Running for politics, I mean running for office in any state is a lot. But when you look at the state that we're talking about right now, Alabama, Georgia, well, it's very tough. But it's definitely rewarding. It's rewarding because of people like you. You know, there are grassroots efforts out there all over across Alabama and across America, for that fact, that are definitely, that understand the importance of getting involved in politics from the bottom up. It's not just about electing Bernie Sanders for president. It's about electing Bernie Sanders for president, electing progressive mayors in all of these cities across the country, in state legislatures, and in the United States Congress and Senate. You know, I believe that's important, and that's really one of my calls to action. You know, I don't like to talk about it. I like to be about it.
Absolutely, and we love hearing that because there comes a point where, you know, you can look around and see what's wrong, and then, you know, there are those who, you know, are going to point it out, and then there are those who are going to take that extra step and actually do something. So that is definitely admirable. And, you know, I was looking over at your website, JT for Congress, ALO3.com. And looking at some of your platforms, and it is good to hear a Democrat out of Alabama talk about income inequality, and that's one of the first things on your website. I was looking up some stats, just some general stats, and Alabama is the sixth poorest state in the nation. 19% of adults and 28% of children live below the poverty line. And it is, you're, you know, addressing income inequality is something that is definitely a platform of Bernie Sanders. And what are some of the things that you would be able to do in Congress to help alleviate that problem in Alabama? What are some of the solutions that you're pushing for to help not only just Alabama but nationally, because you will be, although you will be representing Alabama, you will be part of the Congress?
That's a great question, and I'd like to start off by saying bring my wife to the equation. I'm married to a soldier, and we both were soldiers at the same time. She's now an officer, and I decided to, you know, not put my career on hold, but realize that there's a sacrifice that we have to make in order for families to stay together. And that's a step that I took. And taking that step, it gave me a closer firsthand experience with what women actually do, you know, on a day-to-day basis. You know, I don't have the common, it's not natural for me to think about, oh, well, I need to make sure that I cook healthy meals for my kids. I need to make sure that I iron the clothes. And, you know, those are some things that come natural to women. And when you think about the fact that they're not being paid for doing the same work that a man does, that's a problem. I have a problem with that. I have a daughter. I have sisters. I have cousins, aunties, and I have friends who are also women. And I can't, in good conscience, sit back and allow this to happen without throwing up the red flag. Hey, income inequality is a problem, and it is being carried out on the backs of women. For example, if women are 51% of the population and women are making 70 cents in Alabama, 70 cents per dollar that a man makes, hey, we have a bulk of the population that's making below poverty wages off the jump from the start. And I believe that's, you know, that's where the conversation needs to go in order to move forward with understanding the importance of addressing income inequality.
And you bring up your military service. My husband, he was in the Marines for 13 years. We lived in some of the most glamorous places in the country, like Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. I see from the information you sent us that you completed two tours in Bosnia, and that you did two tours in Germany, two combat tours. And one of the things, you know, tying to your equal pay and where I can really relate is that, you know, when you're in the service, if you make rank of an E6, everybody gets that same pay, you know, and I like the way that you are now supporting your wife and seeing the other side of it as a dependent side, because I don't think a lot of people appreciate what military dependents, they also sacrifice along with the service members whom they love. And It was a struggle, and you know, poverty is one that affects a lot of bases where that you have actual military members who qualify for benefits such as SNAP. What do you think can be done to help uplift these troops and their families who are suffering? They're kind of suffering silently because people think that because they're military that the government is taking care of them. And there's some struggles going on with some military families.
Absolutely. That is one of the driving forces to poverty. If you look at the connection of veterans and veterans that are living in poverty, service members and service members that are living in poverty, you have a large amount. I mean, 30% of the men that are living in poverty are veterans. And these are fathers who really want to take care of their family. I know this because serving my country overseas, knowing that we have an opportunity to look at poverty from a third world perspective and to come home and to see a glimpse, to see a hint of that, it fuels me. It's because we're the greatest nation on earth, and we invest $600 billion in our military defense industry, but we will not take the necessary steps to invest the funding that we need to take care of the veterans, the funding that we need to ensure that our service members and their families are afforded and actually have the resources that they need to live a life that's respectable. I don't think it's right for a service member to even qualify for food stamps, not with the sacrifices and the dedication that they make 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's unacceptable, and again, that's something that I'm stepping up and saying enough is enough, and I'm going to lead the charge on that.
How would you – okay, let's talk about that, because one of the problems with the military budget is that, A, we don't really know exactly what the Pentagon spends it on, and that a lot of it goes to building things such as planes that don't work or are ineffective, and there's a lot of money going to the military, to the Pentagon and the DOD, but it's not going towards Veterans Affairs or where we really see a need, and it's going to, I mean, we could blow up the world a couple of times over with what we already have. Are you saying that you would actively work to try and redirect some of that money to where it's needed for veterans and their dependents?
Absolutely. That is exactly what needs to happen. We need someone who's actually served in the military, who can identify the fraud, waste, and abuse that has been ongoing for as long as I've been around the military, and that fraud, waste, and abuse more often than not is perpetuated by the corporations who are connected to the defense industry. For example, I spoke with many, many people who were, I was a civil service employee, I was a GS-12 once I got out of the military, but prior to that I was also a civilian contractor who are actually working on a warfighter-focused contract. So I understand the ins and outs of how the defense industry is actually taking advantage of the taxpayers. Again, they will hire, the government will give a defense contractor, for example, $90 per man hour for one person. That defense contractor will hire that person at $20 per hour. $70 per man hour is going to that defense contractor, paid by the taxpayers, and that individual who's working will get $20 an hour. Again, it appears to be, good compensation, but compared to what they're being paid, the government is being ripped off on many different levels. That's just one example.
And that money adds up. So when we talk about fraud and waste, and that's a lot of things we hear coming from the Republican side, I think there's consensus on both to be found between that we need to address the fraud and waste. I think we just see different ways, where people will holler about somebody buying crab legs with a SNAP card and not really looking at the really, really big issues of waste and with the private contractors like what you just exemplified for us. So you are definitely against what we've seen with because those defense contractors, they're part of the 1%. And they're also not paying their taxes. Some of the biggest military contractors are some of our biggest tax avoiders. Lockheed is usually perennially on the list, and Grumman. What in terms of what is your position on, you know, correcting what we've seen and what Bernie Sanders talks a lot about, this massive transfer of wealth that has occurred through our taxes, and you know, the calls that we need to lower the corporate tax rate, and, you know, what is your position on taxes and how we can make the playing field a bit more even and start reinvesting here?
Well, my position on taxes is I think it's only necessary that every person, every corporation pays their fair share. And I said person and corporation in conjunction simply because of the Citizens United Group. That Citizens United say corporations are people. Well, the American people cannot get away without paying their taxes. And that tag has been placed on these corporations. The Supreme Court actually said that, you know, that money from those corporations is some form of speech. And based on that fact, I only think it's necessary for those people to pay their fair share. And the plan that Bernie Sanders has to address that issue, you know, by wanting to find an individual to appoint to the Supreme Court justice that will be in favor of overturning Citizens United by reinstating Glass-Steagall Act. I believe those are major first steps into, you know, bringing the American dream back to the American people and not continuing to allow it to lie in the hands of the American corporations.
Hey, Jesse, this is Scout. I got a question for you. This is Scout. I got a question for you. You being from Alabama, y'all have some great institutions in Alabama. You know, you have the University of Alabama, you have Tuskegee, you have Auburn, Roy Eagle. You have so many. You got UAB. You got all of these wonderful schools in Alabama, and I used to live just across the border from where congressional district is over in LaGrange, Georgia, in Troup County.
Okay.
And so a lot of our kids from that portion of Georgia actually go to school in Alabama. And my question to you is, how do you feel about Bernie's plan to provide free college education to the students of America, particularly since we have so many great institutions in the state of Alabama?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I believe that is a great plan, and Alabama will definitely benefit from it. I mean, when you look at how Alabama's public education system has pillaged for so long, just this year, the governor borrowed $100 million from the education fund here in Alabama. So to be able to have federal funding to come into this state to ensure that public education is free from kindergarten through 12th grade and on the institutional level, I believe that's how we'll be able to compete in the 21st century. That's how we'll be able to bring jobs and industry to Alabama. If the labor pool is not very educated, then you're not going to be able to offer industries from Silicon Valley to come to Alabama that's going to bring these high-paying jobs that the people in Alabama need.
Yeah,
so,
that's a secondary,
right.
A secondary question. That I know that here, being that we, you know, that we just, you know, all the automotive plants that got placed in Western Georgia, and some of that bled over into a couple of plants, putting them, you know, going down that 85 corridor between the Georgia border and Auburn. What do you feel like, you know, and a lot of our congressional and state legislators had a lot of a hand in that process of trying to get that here. Do you think that, you know, do the people that are sitting in office now in Alabama haven't done enough to bring that type of industry to Alabama, or do they just want Alabama to stay the same? Because that's what we've heard here in Georgia for the longest time, that Alabama is, that the current leadership in Alabama is scared to allow Alabama to grow, because if it does, then it's going to end up like, you know, Georgia with a bunch of immigrants and a bunch of different types of, you feel like that's the same idea, that is, that's what's holding Alabama back?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. I haven't, you know, had an opportunity to look at it from that perspective. Interesting point. But what I will say is, when you have critical thinking that's removed from the curriculum, people hear what they want to hear. Let's talk about the right-to-work state. Alabama is a right-to-work state. So we have these plants, like you mentioned, that's set up on the 85 corridor. On I-20, there are some plants that set up along I-20 as well. And what this is, you have a lot of people in Alabama who are working at these plants, and their job is not secure. They could be fired at any given time. You have people who work temporary services at those locations for years. And during that time period, they're not receiving health insurance or any other type of benefits. They don't get time off. And what is that? It transfers back to the home. You know, if they're at work for 12 hours a day trying to make a living, then nobody's paying a whole lot of attention to their kids. And then, you know, that's, you know, it's a vicious circle. And that circle is set up based on the industry and the jobs that's out here in Alabama. Again, that right-to-work state is really what's hurting people here. We need more unions.
Yes, and I see that you're also definitely for the fight for 15, and to, and I'm assuming that's 15 and the union protections.
Yeah.
But I kind of wanted to double back. You had mentioned about how the Governor Bentley, had been moving money from the education fund, and that was primarily done to, because he's trying to hold to his pledge not to raise taxes in Alabama. So, they're trying not to, and we kind of had a similar issue here in Georgia with our transportation tax bill, where, you know, Republicans who had previously said we're not going to raise taxes, and then they were like, we're going to raise taxes on gasoline, and, you know, because we have to fund, we ended up passing a bill that's going to come nowhere close to addressing our infrastructure needs, you know, for the present and future, but it did pass because something had to be done. Do you think there's a lack of political will in Alabama, or that there's a misconception with the citizens about the need, how their tax dollars go? Because I was just kind of looking through stuff, and I was stunned to see that he was raiding the education fund to try and, you know, he's taking money, you know, he's robbing Peter to pay Paul in order to keep himself alive politically, but he's doing great harm. So as a congressional member, how would you help bring money home to Georgia, I mean to Alabama, to help infrastructure? And would you raise taxes, would you advocate a raise in taxes to do that, even if it was a marginal amount? And I'm not trying to put you on blast or anything, but I think most people are good with paying taxes if they know where their tax money is going and if it's not going to be wasted. And so you want to talk a little bit about infrastructure issues and transportation tax and how your role as a congressional member in helping to make that happen?
Absolutely. I actually have a plan that I call the Triangle for Success. And that triangle for success includes raising the wage, it includes infrastructure rebuilding, it includes education. If we incorporate all of those three areas, we'll be able to rebuild America. and rebuild Alabama, for example. And let me give you an example how that would happen. We have 2,200 bridges in Alabama that are in need of repair. Those bridges stretch across the congressional district. They stretch across the state. We have very high unemployment numbers. If we were to begin a federal training plan to begin to train workers to do these skills that it will take to rebuild roads and bridges and hire them at $10 an hour, we'll be able to, once again, cut into the unemployment numbers and bring in additional tax dollars. So there will be no need to raise taxes because we'll have tax revenue that's coming in. How can we get that tax revenue to take care of the infrastructure? Well, we have corporations in Alabama who don't pay any taxes. So if we tag those corporations and make them pay their fair share, then the tax dollars that are needed to take care of the roads that are being paid by the citizens can be dedicated to that and not transferred to different things, again, to like the take from Peter to pay Paul, rather Peter to pay Paul. So there's some ways to do it, but it's going to take people to understand that the process and the system has been rigged and set up against them for a long time.
I wanted to go back around and touch on Citizens United and your supportive of a constitutional amendment. That's something that's kind of dear to my heart because, you know, I've been involved with that issue for a couple of years, and I'm a democracy kind of gal. But one of the things that has been wonderful to see and is reminiscent of President Obama's campaign is a lot of the small money donors. Your campaign, from what I could see, you've got a great little grassroots coalition growing, and it's wonderful to see, and it gives us hope here in Georgia. But how is this revolution that's going on, this political revolution, how is that helping you? Are you seeing a lot of, you know, small donations coming in, and, you know, are you rejecting, you know, are you starting to be courted by people who are trying to bring you big money and, you know, vote, you know, if you do this, you know, we'll slide you a little this. What are you seeing? And you know, because running for a congressional race, you know, people will tell you, oh, you need $1 million to run for Congress, or, you know, you need X amount of dollars. How are you doing it?
Well, first of all, this is not my first rodeo.
Right.
I ran in,
exactly. You
ran
before.
Absolutely, in 2014. And I began that campaign. I looked at, you know, the numbers, looked at the historical data, and I just, hey, there's no way I can compete with this guy raising money. So what we decided to do was to step out and attempt to raise the least amount of money necessary to win an election. And in 2014, we raised $8,800, and we were able to secure nearly 35% of the vote. Now, that's a very small amount of money. And so far this year, I'll tell you what we've spent. $375 campaigning this year. So what I'm doing is again attempting to raise the least amount of money necessary to win an election, because I know for a fact, based on my opponents, the people who contribute to my opponent on a consistent basis, and he's been in office for 14 years, I do know for a fact that politicians are being bought. And if you can be bought, you can be sold. And Jesse Smith is not for sale. It's not going to happen. So, again, I'm adopting the strategy of you know, if there's some funds that I need, I'll go out and ask people for funds. But I'm not just trying to build up a war chest, because, again, those war chests is another part of the corrupt or the political system that a lot of people don't understand.
Are you being supported by a PAC or a super PAC?
No super PAC. I had some people who wanted to create a super PAC. And, well, if you do, don't put my name on it.
Yes, I'm looking at the numbers. Your competitor in this race is Mike Rogers. He sits on quite a few powerful committees in Congress: Agriculture, Armed Services, and Homeland Security. He seems to take quite a bit of money from General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin. He's getting money from a lot of his contributions are coming from defense, law firms. So it's kind of, you know, people get daunted by the numbers, but I love that you're looking for the least amount of money. There was an old mother wit that I used to hear growing up that said, some money just don't spend. And I think that, you know, candidates like yourself and Bernie Sanders are definitely showing how that can't be done. And you know, in Bernie's case, he's showing where he can actually compete by using small money. You know, that little change does add up. But I think it's great that you are defying that and showing, you know, that there's life in the South. There was recently an article about how the South is, you know, rebuilding itself politically, and that there are candidates coming up. What I found stunning about that article was that they were basically saying that Democrats are starting to win by running as Democrats, you know. By actually, you know, I think we saw such a shift of candidates to the right to try and pick up those voters there that neglected the base, which caused apathy, which caused Democrats to lose races. And as I was looking, you know, at you, it was kind of good to see somebody who was unabashedly proud to run on Democratic principles and not stick their finger in the wind and see which way it's blowing. I wanted to ask you about, there's been a couple of things in terms of voting rights and social justice. You know, we all heard, and I often get on the Progressive Democrats of America's phone calls, and there was one where they talked about, and it was a story that was in the media for a little bit, about the closure of the DMV offices. I believe it was 31 that was brought about to make it harder to vote. Are you finding it difficult for you know, your supporters to be able to go out and vote, because you're one of the states along with us that have primaries on March the 1st, right?
That's correct.
So are people actively working now to make sure that they can register and vote, because, you know, we were all horrified. You know, me personally, I don't think anybody, regardless of your political ideology, should make it harder. You can't call yourself a leader and say you believe in democracy, and when you are putting your finger on the scale and making it harder for people to vote. What is going on in Alabama to help push that back? Because we heard about the story, and then it kind of died out.
Well, the grassroots efforts right now is what we're relying on. You know, everywhere I go, I have voter registration forms with me, and I make sure I register people to vote as, you know, every opportunity I get. And I also make sure that I reach back to these people. I remain in contact with them to keep them involved in the process and not just let them feel like, I'm registered to vote. No, I want them to realize that registering to vote, you're committing to democracy. And as an individual, as a leader, I believe it's essential that we hold people to their commitment. you know, that's something that I've grown accustomed to from serving in the military. And, you know, I have to hold myself to a higher standard, but I have to also establish a standard that people can be held to. So it's a matter of trying something new right now, and I honestly believe we can combat that problem that was put out there, because, you know, the Republicans are affected by that as well. It's not just Democrats. It's not just black people. You know, Republicans
right.
are affected as well. So whomever gets out and put their boots on the ground and do the grassroots effort, getting people registered and making sure people get back to the polls and remain engaged into the process, those will be the victors. And that's a strategy that we're trying to employ here in the 3rd District, if you will.
I really, really hope you're successful in that. It looks like you're getting people fired up and engaged, and there's nothing more powerful than a dedicated voter. Wanted to talk a bit about, there was a story that came out from Dothan. Am I pronouncing that correct? Is it Dothan or Dothan?
Dothan.
Dothan, okay. Dothan. All right. You're familiar with the story that came out about the police department. I believe there were like 12 officers who were accused of planting drugs or evidence on black suspects. And it's for most black Americans, we were like, well, you know, it was kind of like a validation of what we know to be true. But there hasn't been much going on since that revelation. I see that some people have come out and attacked the blogger who first released this story. And what was kind of bothering to me, because, you know, with the rise of Black Lives Matter and, you know, issues of criminal justice reform, while, you know, and that's something that Bernie Sanders talks a lot about and is going to address as part of his administration should he be elected, it was stunning to see absolutely nothing pretty much happen. We've heard no Department of Justice investigation. No FBI investigating it. I don't even think they're actually doing anything on the city or county level. I believe they're asking for an independent investigation, but one is not started yet. In terms of criminal justice and what African Americans are seeing, and, you know, one thing that Alabama and Georgia has in common, we have a significant population of undocumented immigrant workers. What are your views on criminal justice? What needs to be done? And do you support you know, we just saw this past weekend the wave of raids against undocumented workers. We had a family here in Georgia that it was just heartbreaking to hear. You know, they just came in and bum rushed. This wasn't a person who, you know, these are people who are coming to look for opportunity or who are escaping violence in their home countries. So on criminal justice and in terms of undocumented workers, what's your policy behind that or principles that you are championing?
Well, the principles that I am championing on criminal justice, I can tell you, right here in Alabama, we have a lot of prisons. And I took a tour of the juvenile detention center. And then you have to understand that this is all for profit. This
mm-hmm.
is all for profit. And it is, we don't get our people Democrats. And that's what I mean when I say our people. We don't get Democrats involved and engaged in the process, then this will continue to happen. But most importantly, we need to have black leaders to step up and not just be a part of the political process and go vote, but stomp and shout. We need to stand up and fight for ourselves. If we don't have a seat at the table
not create laws that are against us if we're not sitting at the table making sure that those laws don't are not harmful to us. And, you know, I believe the it all begins with being involved in the process. When you think about the education, if you will, and how that's connected to prisons and the pipeline to prisons, certain neighborhoods you drive around in Alabama, you can basically tell where the high voter turnout is. Okay, well, this is an area of high voter turnout. Look at the nice schools. Look at the school ratings. But the areas with low voter turnout, those schools are exactly what they are. And that's simply because the squeaky wheel gets the grease. People need to begin to not just complain on Facebook or complain on Twitter about the things that are going on. They need to join the revolution. They need to realize that this is our chance. We have a guy who's been advocating for the exact same policy for over four decades. This is our chance, and I believe we'll be successful, but it's going to take people to have a different perspective and not continue to say that my folks that's old.
Well, I think one of the problems, though, is that basically the Democratic Party of Alabama is defunct. So, you know, while people do have to get engaged, they also have not really had a party that they can believe in or who has been actively fighting for them, which is why we were so delighted to see you, because you embody the spirit of what a you know, Democratic leadership should be, and I hope that people are listening and considering. But part of the problem, and I think this speaks across the country, is that we, you know, it's a vicious cycle where people have not, and it's true, people in particularly in the African American community have not been engaging, but sometimes we have been putting our faith into certain legislators who have not been working for us, and that leads to more people falling into apathy and not wanting to vote and thinking their vote doesn't count, because in some cases it didn't. So how are you going to be different from what people see in the past, specifically African American voters who are saying, you know, why should I vote for you? You're just going to do like the other ones did.
Well, that's a great question, and I find myself answering that question, you know, quite often. And I'll tell you, I will be different simply because I come from a different mindset. Politicians begin the process. They go to, you know, they based on how people tell them what needs to happen in politics. Their platform and their agenda is created based on what the media or how their donors establish their platform. My platform is being established by people. I have people that are volunteering for my campaign. They're not getting paid. It's not about the money from the campaign's perspective. It's about showing the people that if we work together, we can put the resources into your pocket. We can take the resources away from those organizations who are paying the politicians to continue to vote against you. Well, we can put those resources in your pockets by making sure those corporations pay their fair share and creating opportunities in black communities that will definitely help them out and move the Democratic agenda forward. I mean, in 2014 in Alabama, there were 51 Republicans on the statewide ballot, and there were only 13 Democrats. I was on that. I was one of those numbers in 2014. Here we are in 2016. There are approximately 16 Republicans on the state ballot. and about 5 Democrats on the state ballot, and I'm one of those Democrats. So it's showing consistency, and it's showing that you actually care because you're out there doing the work. I don't want them to just vote
right.
for me because I'm black. I want them to vote for me because they realize that I'm qualified and I'm prepared and ready to make government work for the people and not continue to tell people, well, it's broke. Well, government can't work. Well, Democrats did this. Republicans. That's garbage because lives are involved.
Well, I can say that by looking at your social media presence, you've got quite the rainbow coalition going out there. And I have to tip my hat to your volunteer grassroots core. They are out there doing the work. And as an activist myself, that is, you know, you see things and you just want to wipe away a tear. That it just does my heart so good to see that. I was looking, and, you know, when you think of Alabama, you think there's only one person in Alabama who's a Democrat, and that's Representative Terry Sewell. She is a Clinton supporter and part of Mrs. Clinton's Alabama Leadership Council. So you're facing the Clinton machine in Alabama. And it looks like they're going to be going full guns against Bernie Sanders. You know, we hear some of the things about and you know, how he can't win, how he doesn't have appeal with the black community. Have you been running? What have you been hearing as you go throughout the state? In terms of Bernie Sanders and his campaign, and how do you make the connection to your campaign as to being in line with, you know, those who are familiar with Bernie Sanders, your platform, and what you plan to do for Alabama?
Well, in this particular situation, there are more people in Alabama, I believe, that are aware of me than they are Bernie Sanders. So what I have the privilege of doing is introducing Bernie Sanders to the people of Alabama. And particularly to the African Americans. When I think about the African American community and I think about 3 strikes, you're out rule that Hillary Clinton was advocating for, I think about all the African American fathers who were taken away from their kids. And those kids were not afforded that discipline that father could have possibly provided, that insight that these young men need in their lives. And I always feel passionate about it because I'm a father of 3 sons. I call them the 3 kings. And that's because I believe that if we treat them and if we prepare them to be such, that's what they will be. But if we don't have fathers that are in the home and they were taken out because if it's 3 strikes, you're out rule. There's a lot of families that have been broken up. There's a lot of families that are still in poverty based on that fact. And, you know, so that's one of my stances. And I, you know, remain committed to that stance because it's, you know, if you look at the numbers, there it is. And okay. We have a large veteran population as well, and I also express, you know, I was there for the invasion of Iraq, the initial invasion. You know, the weapons of mass destruction were supposed to be there. We had all the chemical gear necessary, but we didn't use it. We did not have to use it. So that told me, day one, this was a lie. So, again, that's something that Bernie Sanders knew in the beginning, and Hillary Clinton stood on the Senate floor, and she said, "Hey, she's very confident that going into Iraq is the best thing to do." And you know, humble pie has been eaten, but we definitely can't accept that apology. I don't accept that apology because 22 veterans commit suicide every day. 6,000 were lost. Millions of of people were injured. We have hundreds of thousands of veterans that are waiting to get an appointment. So all of these things are a result of that vote. And, you know, I'm just speaking from a Democrat having the opportunity to voice my opinion about my choice.
I think that's, you know, one of the biggest issues that is fracturing the Democratic Party right now is that, you know, it seems like the choice and the will of the people are not being listened to by the DNC and the party elite. I find that there's more democracy on the local levels, the local committee levels, and I think a lot of the anger that is coming towards Democrats is really reserved for the DNC and the very serious people up in Washington who come up with these cockamamie ways of how they're going to win an election. You're doing it the good old-fashioned way. You're going out there, you're hustling for those votes. You're keeping it 100 with the people. But, Scout, do we still have that caller on the line?
Yes, we do. Let's go ahead and take it. Hello, caller. Down South and Dirty.
Hi, I'm calling from Oklahoma. Excuse me. I'm getting ready to go to a phone bank for Bernie Sanders. You know, I think the problem is that people do not get involved. I'm really tired. I am exhausted, and I'm still going to go to that phone bank. But I'm from Oklahoma, and I'm with the group We the People Oklahoma, where we got the sheriff to resign after 27 years. We had to force a grand jury indictment or investigation where we got a grand jury indictment. Last Sunday. Feels like an eternity ago. We saved a church, the first church in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, built by family of freedmen, the sons and daughters of freedmen. Still had their piano in there with only three keys out of place. They had the bulldozer in front of this church. You know, when you find out about something, do something. We cannot just sit on the sidelines anymore. You have to be active. Are you going
absolutely
to lose anything?
We're talking with Jesse Smith. He's running for office in Alabama for the 3rd Congressional District. Do you have a question for him?
Well, I was listening to him about maybe the last 2 minutes. Sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and he's in touch with the people, and I think that's key. A question I guess I would have is, what are you doing in the area of social justice for the state of Alabama or locally?
Well, what I've began to do, thanks for your question, and I appreciate you listening. What I began to do is to establish a coalition. I have people that are volunteering from Birmingham, that are volunteering from Montgomery and other parts of the state. And we're going to put together an apparatus. We're going to put together a social justice reform platform, and we're going to present that. It's the way the system is designed. There are many different parts of the corrupt government that we have to infiltrate in order to bring about the change that we're looking for. So it's a hard process, but it's something that we're definitely engaged in and actively involved in. There are professors who have been, you know, doing research in these areas for a while. They're stepping up and helping as well. So to really drive home my answer is, I believe when we're done, we'll have a platform that will definitely be able to fit any state in America. I believe it will definitely be all-encompassing because we have so many issues here in Alabama.
Well, I'm certain of that. Our leader of our group is Mark Lewis, M-A-R-Q, Lewis. He won Tulsa of the Year in the Tulsa People magazine. It's a really well-written article and shows how we developed and how we affected change. We did this in less than a year, about 10 months. It's amazing what was done. But it's got a point-by-point presentation in there if you want to take a look at it. And he's originally
from
North Carolina.
I'd love to take a look at it. If you're connected with us on Facebook, if you don't mind sharing that on the Down South and Dirty Facebook page, I'd love to take a look at it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd love to share that because I think it's a good base for a lot of local cities or towns to start their own program. And that's what it's about. I mean, what you were talking about, you know, nationwide. It sounds great to me, and I wish you the best of luck, sir.
And also,
well,
drop
thank
us
you.
Your contact y'all over in our Oklahoma. So, you know, we have the need to touch bases about some things over that way. We could, so that'll be good, too.
Jesse. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, ma'am. Go ahead.
No, just make sure we have information or how can we get in, for those who are listening, how can they get in touch with you?
We have a Facebook page called We the People Oklahoma, WTPO. There's another one that's not us. They're more Tea Party based.
Okay. All right, gotcha.
WTPO.
Well,
we're
thank you for
local
calling.
And we're not hot, so.
Okay. Well, I thank you for calling it, and thank you for all you do. People need to understand that it's you know, whether it's politics or organizing, it's all local, and it starts from the bottom up. And, you know, all it takes is one crazy person to get the ball rolling, and that's why we appreciate you and people like Mr. Smith who are doing just that and defying, you know, those who say, you know, it can't be done. I present Exhibit A, you know. So
to get that racist sheriff out of here, that was a miracle and a lot of hard work. And forming LLC instead of a nonprofit, that is key. Form a LLC, not a nonprofit.
Amen, sister. Well, thanks so much for your question and comments. Jesse, how can people get in touch with you? How can they connect with the campaign? What are your, where's your contact information? How can people donate? Let people know, how can they get in touch with you?
Okay, well, you can get in contact with me on Facebook. I'm always on Facebook. Facebook.com/JesseSmithForCongress. On Twitter, JT for Congress 2016. And my campaign website is www.JT4CongressAL03.com. And there's a donate button on my website. There's also an Act Blue donation button on my Facebook campaign page.
Well, I've already posted your donate page up Down South and Dirty and asked people to support spreading the political revolution in Alabama by donating to you. So hopefully we'll get some hits from that.
I really appreciate it. And I would like to, you know, hopefully we could do a live broadcast one day, you know, even if we're just sitting on the porch, really, talking politics.
Oh, we love it.
Yeah.
You know what? I love those suggestions because then I can bug Scout for us to go on a road trip. So, I mean, I would love it. If you're ever in Atlanta, in Metro Atlanta, give us a call or, you know, we'll see what we can do about coming to Alabama.
What part of Alabama do you live in? I know you're on the eastern side, but which town in particular?
Tell City.
And what is that closest to?
It's not too far from, it's about Birmingham.
Oh,
okay,
see,
okay.
Scout, we could do that in a minute.
Yeah, that's going down
see.
20, right?
Straight down I-20, yeah.
Straight shot.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's,
to,
it sounds like.
When is your primary election in Alabama?
The primary in Alabama is March 1st, but I don't have a primary opponent.
Okay.
So,
but your Republican challenger does. So whoever wins, the Republican primary is who you'll face in November. Must be good, though. You know, you don't have to worry about going through a primary fight. So
well,
this is really.
Well, No, it's I actually wanted to fight. I actually wanted to fight.
Oh,
I wanted
I'd like to hear that.
I wanted to challenge
you. I'm glad you're saying it. I'm glad you're saying it. That lets me know, as a Democrat, that you are a true blue Democrat that understands that we need to have discussion and people need to have. It's good for us that iron sharpens iron, and it also brings out more people to vote because people will be have they feel like they have more of a choice on the Democratic side.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, I didn't have an opponent in 2014, so nobody knew me. And I don't have an opponent now, so nobody knew me. If it happens again in 2018, I'm going to hopefully be able to convince another Democrat to get his head get scarred up a little bit.
Well, hopefully in 2018 you'll be running for re-election.
Well,
so,
that's
good. So we're going to look at it from that standpoint.
It's a good thing. So
I like challenges. I there's nothing wrong with a fight, but like you said, iron sharpens iron. And hey, once the process is over, people get behind the nominee, and we go and we win. That's the way it works.
Well, we would love to have you back again, to talk about it. We're going to try to find some more Sanders Democrats around the country. It is really, really a beautiful thing to see all of the candidates who are stepping up. I know it's got to be a hard decision. People have asked me, will you run? And I told them the only thing I run for is the bus or the train. But it is really, I don't think people understand the gravity that, one has to consider all of these things when running for office. So I have mad respect for anybody who decides to run for office because it's wonderful to see, but it is also, it's madness, what politics has become right now. And some of the things you see in here, you just look, my daughter has a way of just standing still and looking at you. You just want to look at people and go, you just said that out loud to me, It is stunning some of the things that you hear, and you just go, oh, my God, we are so screwed. When, some of these people are actually running our country, it is alternately funny and sad. But it's really, really good to see, the light coming, particularly in the South. I often say that the South is the land that time forgotten, that we earned that nickname of the Dirty South. It don't get no dirtier than the South. So it's good, and it's particularly good to see Alabama coming back because Alabama Democrats were just about extinct. This is really, really good to see.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. I always look at situations that, if I have to be there, I'm a trained leader. Why would I not at least give it a shot? If there's someone that has a better plan and that can do a better job, I will support that person. But I refuse to just sit back and allow this guy to go unchallenged and people complain about it. No. We're going to change the mindsets of people, and it comes from setting the example. If you see it, you do it. So I'm taking on the role of setting the example here in Alabama. And hopefully, years to come, people will see benefit and, we'll move forward with a greater state.
Well, you've got a really good infrastructure you're building off of, and I love the fact that you were in 18. So you're looking forward, you're not giving up, you're keeping in the fight. That's something that Scout and I, we don't hear that often. So, it's really, really good to hear that, and we really, really do wish you the best of luck. And it has been wonderful, meeting you. But I bet you I know somebody who could give you a run for money for office.
Okay.
Your wife, Carla. Your wife.
Well, she would. She would destroy me. She is. She is a great debater, and you know, not just because she's a woman. She's very, very intelligent. And you know, I know my role, and I keep myself in my position. Therefore, I don't have to deal with any of that. She's my teammate, and you know, she definitely makes me better.
Okay, well, we'd like to thank you for being on. We're going to have to go off. I think we're probably running right up on the clock. Scout, you want to take us out?
All right, everybody. Well, thank you, Mr. Smith, for coming on Down South and Dirty. And everybody, stay tuned next week. Down South and Dirty, we're out.
Peace.